You're listening to the Cinemaphile Podcast with Andrew Shearer, brought to you by OnlineAthens.com.
I thought that...
British lady says, recording in progress. Oh, let me move this closer to my face. Hi, everyone. Thank you for listening to the Cinemaphile Podcast. I am Andrew Shearer, arts and culture reporter for OnlineAthens.com and the Banner Herald. And I'm here with my friend Sam. Sam, how are you?
I am well. It's snowing here today. It's very strange.
We're having weird weather, dude. Here in the south, it's like we're about to get into a heat wave. It was like 70 some odd today.
What? But
yeah. Can we just like split the difference?
Oh, I wish, right?
Okay. Sam is all the way in Washington State. And so, well, I hope everyone's okay out there.
It'll be melted in an hour, so it's all good.
Right. Well, you had a hot, temperatures have, been unseasonably warm for you, right? The past couple of years.
Yes, very much so. So
welcome to the weather podcast, everyone. We're not talking
about, right?
Speaking of the Cinemaphile, this podcast will cease to be made at episode number 600. And we are getting ever so close to episode 600. We are now at 580 some odd. So by the end of the year, at the rate I'm going, it might take me 2 years. I'm going to start something I'm right now calling the Athens Culture Podcast. So it won't just be film. It'll also be music, and it'll be interview based. So it'll be an extension of the work I do as a reporter. I told someone on Twitter the other day, I was a paid movie critic for a decade. And that was the decade that the Cinemaphile began. And so, the Cinemaphile's lasted 10, 12 years at this point. And anyway, so you and I, it won't change anything about what you and I do. It will be added to that because I need to talk about movies. That's just something I have to do.
Me too.
But this may be like the only time that I'm doing covering film, unless I'm interviewing someone who is a filmmaker. And related to my reporting beat. And then if and when I lose my job, you and I will start the old podcast from 06 back
again. Oh my. We might have to come up with a better name, and yeah. It would be something involving an ass, but yeah.
A donkey. another farm animal. No, as you could probably tell, Sam and I go very far back. All the way back to the video store clerk days at a certain yellow and blue conglomerate entity. But we still like to talk about the new movies with each other. And we thought you might be interested in being in on that conversation. So if it sounds good to you, we are going to talk about the five most recent movies that we watched in the month of, I guess we're covering a little bit of January and some of February at this point.
Yeah. Yep.
So, do we want to talk about the newest movie that we both saw to start off?
We can.
Okay. We both just saw Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania from Marvel Studios. What did you think about Ant-Man and the Wasp: Quantumania? There's going to be spoilers. I'm sorry.
Yes, there are spoilers. So fast forward if you don't want to get spoiled.
Skip through this.
I really liked this film quite a bit. And I have enjoyed the Ant-Man series and think that it is a really nice kind of standalone. Like, you don't have to be in on every little detail of every other little Marvel thing happening to be able to enjoy these films. This one with no exception. And to me, some of the like writing and comedic writing specifically in the Ant-Man series is just kind of some of the best.
Yeah.
And I don't know if part of that is just like Paul Rudd is funny.
I've always loved Paul Rudd.
And that they're maybe trying to write more for him, or if it's the fact that like the character Ant-Man is just like a normal dude. Like, he's not some superhero with superpowers or anything else. He's just like dude who like worked at Baskin Robbins and maybe makes some bad life choices, and there we go. And so, he's not doesn't have it all together, doesn't have an answer for everything. And so that character, Scott Lang, is just kind of really nice because he's very relatable. So I personally really loved it. Jonathan Majors getting added because I did watch the Loki series. We knew Kang was coming at some point. This character, he is just so good because you don't really know. Is he good? Is he bad? And then you're like, oh, he's bad. Oh, maybe he's good. I don't really know. And like, even now the movie's over and I'm still like questioning, is he good or is he bad? So it's like, just great. And then I love that they also focused on Scott Lang's daughter, Cassie, in the movie too.
Yeah.
And like, you're kind of ushering like in the next wave of superheroes, also like a normal person who is trying to make the world a better place, like much of our youth right now. And I liked it. I thought it was great.
I'm like you. I'm a fan of the Ant-Man series apart from the Marvel Cinematic Universe, just because they are made for a lot younger of an audience than the other Marvel movies are made. Because, as a parent, I wouldn't show necessarily all any Marvel to a child. A lot of these are very violent, a lot of gunplay, characters dying, blood, things like that. And even the first Ant-Man has a little moment where the villain atomizes some guy and he turned into this like this glop of gore, very small but still not too different from what that one character got on. I almost said Edie McClurg, but it wasn't her, and Cereal Mom, you got gore on your shoe. But the Ant-Man ones are skewed toward a younger audience, and maybe for the biggest reason, because of Cassie, the character was so little in the first Ant-Man, and that scene with the giant Thomas the Tank Engine, right? I mean, that's classic. And so, combine that with the comedy, I think all the Ant-Man movies are they're aimed at an audience that's not necessarily the Avenger movie audience or the Doctor Strange audience or even Spider-Man. I think they're clearly like aiming for younger. And so, that being said, I think Quantumania felt less like a Marvel Cinematic Universe movie and more like something right out of a comic. As film, it felt like maybe a Star Wars or a Spy Kids movie.
Yes.
Very much with the family element, reminded me of Spy Kids quite a bit. So it takes place entirely in the quantum realm, which means you're basically watching a fantasy world the entire time. I didn't see it in 3D, but I did see it in Screen X, which I am in love with for Marvel movies because it's on three walls spread across. So you get to see a lot more things happening around them because they're specially formatted for that. But I agree with absolutely everything you said. Jonathan Majors has been one of my favorite actors ever since I saw him in Last Black Man in San Francisco. And so I knew he was going to be, to me, he's the best villain. Marvel's always had kind of a problem with their villains. They haven't been quite as strong as DC movies, but they've gotten better. Like Eric Killmonger in the first Black Panther was just, I mean, he was pretty much how you were describing Kang. Is he good or is he bad? Because you kind of see where he's coming from, you know?
Yeah.
But Majors is just an incredible talent. He and Michelle Pfeiffer, I thought, really carried the dramatic element for the movie.
100%. And then the addition of the cameo from Bill Murray with a little comic relief in the middle in a very tense scene was nice as well.
He was playing a bad guy because, as we know, Bill Murray's kind of a bastard.
And then I think one of the things for me that's really different for this film, apart from so many of the other Marvel films, is that it happens in the quantum realm, but it felt like it was happening in one place. Whereas so many of the other Marvel films, it's like, this thing is happening over here, and then let's quick cut to this character over here and this thing happening there, and then quick let's cut to this third character and this thing happening here, and then like at some point they all come together. And that was not the case with this. It really was very much like the story sure, you started off on Earth and then quickly went into the quantum realm, and then everything happened there. And so it wasn't like, you know, trying to keep up with 10 things happening in 10 places, and which is what we get in so many of the other Avengers movies and Marvel movies. And so I actually appreciated that because it felt a little more linear in some ways.
Yeah, Disney Plus hopefully has saved us from that.
I hope so.
From now on, because those movies, yeah, they had no dramatic weight because of how you couldn't stay in one, you know, arc for too long.
Yes.
It's like, this really should be television. I'm watching episodic television on the screen slammed together into 3 hours. Anyway, yep. That was a lot. What else did you see that you want to talk about?
All right. So the next movie on my list is Bones and All.
Was it my top 10 of the year for 2022? I love Bones.
I wish I had seen it in 2022, but I didn't.
Get something to drink. I'll start off by just saying this about Bones and All, because I don't know if we talked about it in the December Cinemaphile or not, but to me, Bones and All is the easy rider of cannibal movies. I don't even know that I love cannibal movies, but I don't think I really knew that that's what it was when I first saw it. But I absolutely love Timothy Chalamet and whoever was his screen partner. I can't remember the name, but they were great together. And I was absolutely happy that it wasn't all white folks in the movie either. But it was funny because I saw it around the time I saw The Menu, which is also, it's not totally cannibal, but it's got maybe a big toe in the cannibal genre. I'm a big cannibal movie fan. And I remember I was okay. I thought The Menu was, I think Sam liked The Menu a lot more than I did, but I still enjoyed it. Like it's more of a comedy. Bones and All has some maybe dark humor in it, but how are you feeling? You good?
Yeah. I'm sorry. Dust.
That's fine.
So Bones and All I knew was a cannibal movie going in, and I thought that this movie was beautiful. This is not me crying.
Okay.
Even though it might sound like I am.
Yeah.
I am. Well, to me, this film like humanized cannibals in a way that I don't feel like other movies in the past have necessarily done, because they've always made them like these scary creatures. And they've been so like horror and gore focused that this one really added so much humanity to a cannibal. Like, yeah. How do they exist and live within our society? And in some ways, you know, you can equate, you know, take out the cannibal and enter, like put in X type of group. And it really speaks to like how people, outsiders, are treated, how people who are different are treated. And how do they navigate living within a society where we try to, or many people try to like put people in buckets and have things be a certain way? I thought the acting was wonderful. Timothy Chalamet or Tom Chocolate or Terry Camel or whatever we want to call him, because he's sort of reached that status, I guess.
Yeah.
Was amazing in this film. And I loved him in Dune as well. But here he just was like so raw and the emotions were great. I think the girl in the film was Taylor Russell.
I just looked at it. I normally don't try. I try to keep my eyes on you stuff. But I think you were going to make me cry.
Oh, so, sorry.
No,
she
fine.
Was great. And I just, like, the story is so unique and interesting and like pulls you in from the first moment and the very first like beginning of the story and how it all kicks off. And you're just like, what is going to happen?
Yeah.
Where does this go? And so I just thought it was a really beautiful film, and it is a little bit heavy, and it's not like necessarily a happy film, but I thought it just was a beautiful story regardless.
Yeah. I totally agree. It was in my Yeah, it was in my top 10 picks for 2022. Saw it in the theater. This director, Luca Guadagnino, he made the movie Call Me By Your Name and did the Suspiria remake that I absolutely love and that I saw in the theater more than once. So it was interesting that he would then return to, and like you said, it's not actual horror because cannibals are normally, but I think he is a horror fan and probably is aware of that and was looking to do something new with those kind of characters. So it's a, yeah, it's kind of a road movie and just spectacular. Highly, yes. Highly recommended. All right.
See it.
I am going to talk about Megan.
Ooh, Mithrigan. Got it.
Mithrigan. Okay. So the reason I'm Megan now has been out for a while. It came out, I believe, in January. And I rushed out to see it. Couldn't wait. They did a great advertising campaign for this movie. It was marketed toward preteens. So a lot of kids at the theater, middle schoolers, and maybe even younger, because they're finally getting a killer doll movie that was not made, you know, based off of an old 80s franchise like Tiffany from the Chucky movies. And plus, those are all R-rated, so it's full of cuss words and blood. Megan was, you know, made for the Alexa generation, the smartphone generation and all that. And so
it's not a doll that's possessed by serial killer.
No,
just some AI.
No, Megan is just that kind of technology, kind of like what we're finding out now about some of these chat, what do you call it, GP, or some of these. They found out that Bing or something was psychotic when they started trying to have it do a chat with someone.
That sounds great.
it was awful. You can read the transcript from New York Times had it on the front page when they were just checking it out. It was very disturbing. So it's, Megan's a very timely movie, but also a blast. It knows the sleepover crowd is coming out for this movie. It knows, like, the people that have, you know, were maybe too young to see Annabelle, but now are getting curious about horror, and they deserve to have their own movies made for them. And so, somebody on the Fangoria Facebook page was like, "You're not a real horror fan if you're watching PG-13. And I'm like,
"What?"
Man, I saw more horror movies before you were born, you know, than you ever.
Flowers in the Attic was terrifying when I was a kid, so let's be real, that's not
you're in no place. But you know, they'll say anything to be a contrarian to something that's obviously going to be a hit, and Megan is brilliant. And my 9-year-old wanted to watch it, and then let her watch it, and she didn't get scared at all. Totally cool. Theater might have been a different story, but sure. I went to the theater a couple of times. Megan was a blast. Seeing it with an audience was a blast. And now, yes, they are coming out with the unrated version.
Mm-hmm.
But seeing as how we're in Black History Month, I should probably mention that it was written by Akilah Cooper, who's Black. She also wrote the movie Malignant, which I absolutely love, and is working on The Nun Part 2. And I guess then we'll do Megan Part 2. Mithrigan.
Mithrigan 2?
Mithrigan 2. I don't know. But anyway, that's my little spiel about Megan. I like to think I know a thing or two about horror. I like to think I've been watching it for just a little while. And this is me telling you that it's great. So there you are.
My next film is the movie Plane, which is came out, I guess, middle of January. I wanted something that I didn't have to think too much and just like an action film. So this was on the... This was right up my alley, was what I was looking for.
Great.
Stars Jared Butler and Mike Coulter. And from the previews and the trailer, you totally get the gist of the story. Gerard Butler is a captain. The plane crashes with this guy who's being transported, who is like a killer or prisoner or whatever. And he's on the plane, and then they crash somewhere where there's bad people that are chasing them. And so this movie is just an action movie. It's not like mind-blowing or some plot twists and things that you don't expect or see coming. What I will tell you about this film is the amount of time they spend from the plane taking off to the plane crashing is just enough to make you tense and nervous and gripping the arms of your chair in the movie theater. And I think I held my breath for like what felt like minutes. And when they finally land safely, I let out a literally like a large gasp, enough so that
did everyone clap theater, like they do when you land in a real,
unfortunately there were like three people in the theater. Okay. So no, but the person sitting next to me that I went with looked at me and they're like, are you okay? It was so like you felt like you were in the plane going down. It was so well done. It was just intense and it was done really well. The rest of the film was just a good, delightful action film. I mean, it also didn't try to like drag on the story for 2.5 hours. It's like, you know, a nice little hour and a half movie. So it's, you know, not trying to be something it's not or be too much. And I actually appreciated that because in this day and age, we have some films, it's like that could have been way shorter. So I liked it. It was a good little fun movie.
Okay. Well, you know, I like it when movies are just kind of, Megan was the same way. It is exactly what you think it's going to be, a great return on investment. And no, there's not a lot to it. It's pretty much written for children. And so, I'm sure I will watch Plane. Love Mike Coulter, Gerard Butler. He's all right. He always seems like he's talking with some potatoes in his mouth. Like, I don't know. He was that way when he was on Saturday Night Live as well. So I don't know. Yeah, I won't watch it on a plane. I'll tell you that.
No, don't.
We're in a plane. There seems to be less wind in here. What else do I want to talk about? Okay. We have this movie called Alice Darling. This was a drama and it was directed by Bill Nye's daughter, Mary, which was cool. It stars Anna Kendrick. Yeah. And Anna Kendrick is someone who I find interesting. And I try not to lump her together with some of the other singing ones, like the one from Ella Enchanted. I like her. She did a movie called Colossal. What the hell's her name? Anyway, so Anna Kendrick, this is a movie about psychological abuse and intimate partner abuse. Usually we see movies like this and it's got to do with someone violent, being kicked around, thrown around, punched, slapped, you know, like that. But that's not the kind of abuse this movie shows. And I know it's a heavy subject, but it's actually done. This little review is mostly about how great Mary Knight was as a director handling this subject matter. Because Anna Kendrick's, she goes away for a weekend with her two friends, one of whom is played by Wonmi Musaku, who was in Lovecraft Country, and I apparently still have a crush on. And so they go away for the weekend, and of course she can't stop checking her phone with messages from her boyfriend that she lives with. And, you know, she's also twisting her hair and pulling it out. She's got all these signs of someone who's clearly having problems. And it's no secret that that's what this movie is about. But the thing was, she didn't tell this guy she went. And so this comes out, you know, throughout the, and there's also this thing about a missing girl that's in the town where they're vacationing and all this. And so, you know, it comes to her friends having to kind of, how do you intervene in a situation like this when someone's clear in an abusive relationship? But it's also good about showing the type of abuse that this guy does, because he's not like harming her necessarily, but he's taking all of her power away.
Yeah.
All of her power away. Second, doing everything from second guessing her to like trying to do the classic you know, isolation stuff where she doesn't want her to be with other people and, you know, just trying to have all this control over her.
Right.
And so, you know, a lot of us don't want to watch a movie that's about abuse and an intimate partner. I would call it a form of violence, definitely. We don't want to see stuff like this. And I've seen it done in really heavy-handed, like in-your-face way, which is totally valid. But this really, if you're wondering whether or not you should watch it because you're like, I don't want to really see that stuff, I would say this is dealt with a very steady hand. And it's doesn't really show violence, but it presents a psychological abuse in a way that I think is super responsible and could actually help someone. So no, it's not one that you want to watch if you're ready to check your brain out the door, right? but it is one if you're down for it, which there's a lot of great movies that have been made and are being made by women who are taking on serious subjects, but doing it their way. And yeah. So if you feel like kind of supporting that, it's a good one to watch. And Anna Kendrick, of course, all of them are great. And one Mosako is a good actor as well. I just happen to have a soft spot. So there's nice. That. It's called Alice, comma, Darling.
Well, my next film is a check your brain at the door kind of film, Shotgun Wedding.
Oh, I loved Shotgun. You know, I watched that the day it came out. You know, I did.
So I had to write myself after the white noise incident. And so this was what I watched the next night to see if I really was conjuring true things to happen from film. And it did not. So.
That was not on the recording, but Sam watched White Noise. And then the next day was the Ohio train thing.
Yeah. So, again, you watch the trailer, you get the gist of the film. Like, J-Lo is getting married to Josh Duhamel's characters. And, you know, these pirates invade the wedding and kind of take over and take them hostage. And they fight back. That is legitimately what this is about. But this movie is so funny. And I just think, like, I just think J-Lo has started to pick very smart roles to play. Kind of a little bit like, oh my gosh, what? Sandra Bullock?
Oh, yeah.
Where she started to pick like specific roles to play that really speak to like her range and her humor and everything else. And I think that J-Lo has started to come into this as well. And this movie, in a lot of ways, reminds me of just like the fun of Lost City last year. Like, it's action. It's a little bit over the top. The comedy is hilarious. The cast is great. I mean, Jennifer Coolidge, I mean,
right,
absolutely wonderful.
She knows that role so well, and she rolls around in it, but it's always versions of the same kind of person, but she's just she's a type. She's great.
And Cheech Marin's in it, but plays a very straight character. Yes. Like, there's not any real humor from him or his character at all. It's like the people around him. The one that plays J-Lo's sister in the film, and then the guy that she has like the one night stand with the night before the wedding.
Great.
Hilarious interaction the whole time. So I just like really appreciated just how fun and out there this film was, and just like everybody looked like they had a blast filming it. And that's just kind of like leaves you feeling good watching the movie too. So I enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, I think it debuted on Amazon Prime right around Valentine's. Mm-hmm. And I had read that Channing Tatum was who they wanted, that Josh Duhamel was kind of like a second, maybe third choice. I don't know. There was apparently J-Lo had this project for years trying to get it made, and it just went through different iterations. But I will watch her in anything. I'll watch her in anything. She's just always been a favorite ever since In Living Color. I just find her really a unique talent. And so, I mean, and plus, dude, Anaconda. I saw J-Lo with a shotgun or something like that, or weapon. I was like, hey, maybe a snake will come out. But I would watch her in space. I would watch her in a period piece. I'd watch her anything. I love, you know, she's like the queen of the wedding movie, you know. I'll watch it. I just will. But I agree with what you said. The strength of Shotgun Wedding is the writing and in the cast. Mm-hmm. Every character is funny.
Mm-hmm.
And every actor they get for every character is funny. Cheech Marin, I had no idea he was going to be in it. I just love to see him. He doesn't have to be Cheech and Chong. You know what I'm saying? He's just great. And you don't see him in movies that much anymore. He's wonderful.
Yeah.
I'm going to talk about a documentary I saw, and that's going to kind of lead into my last recommendation, which is not a movie, but a book about movies. And I never talk about books on this show, but I just read one of the most important film books I think I've ever read in my life. But first I'm going to talk a bit about, this will lead into it, but then we're going to skip and come back to the book at the end. The movie is called In Search of Darkness Part 3. And the In Search of Darkness movies are British documentaries, and they are about 1980s horror movies. And so the very first one, and these are all on Shudder, I think. Shudder, I think, was a producing partner in these, the horror streaming channel. So what they do is, it's like a trip to the video store, the trip to the cinema. And so In Search of Darkness talks about, you know, the first one covers all the major 80s horror movies. And they also have new interviews with the people that made them that are still alive. And they have historians or geeks, people like me, talking about them. They're all crowdfunded. And these documentaries are 3 hours long because they break down every single movie. And so you get to volume 3, and volume 3 is about the video store era. Mm-hmm. And the stuff they cover in this is stuff you probably were familiar with seeing the boxes of when you were young in video stores, back when they had just all kinds of, you know, just off the wall horror crap. And so that's really why this one I even thought to review it, because it was great. And they really did have some deep cuts on there, and it was wonderful. So In Search of Darkness, it is the most exhaustive series about this 80s. People my age and skin color, the 80s are just like solidified in time as being like the greatest decade for everything. Like, I know some people who are so obsessed. I know one guy has an 80s room in his house. He's so obsessed with the 80s. But I am not as enamored of that. It does have a lot of nostalgia for me, but I'm not as taken with it. And the book I'm going to talk about later is finally someone gets to the heart of why I'm not into all that stuff as everybody else did, but particularly the horror of that generation. But we have got another movie that I am really interested to hear about you from your list.
So my last film is called The Good House. This movie stars Kevin Kline and Sigourney Weaver, who have done movies together before.
How old is this movie?
This movie came out last fall. This is not that old.
I had no... Where'd you see it?
I saw it streaming somewhere. Ooh, don't ask me which service.
I love
it was
both
on.
Of those actors. I can't believe I didn't see this.
I love both of them too. So I almost went to see it in the movie theater last fall, and then stuff happened and I didn't make it there to see it. It came out the same time, I think, as the Julia Roberts, George Clooney film that I haven't seen either.
Oh, it's good. It's good. I've seen that.
So I love both these actors so much, and I thought they were wonderful together in Ice Storm a million years ago. And I have a soft spot for like older people romantic comedies, you know, like people who have already done their careers and had children and everything else, and they're single and like, you know, and that's what I was expecting this film to be. And, it's not exactly, and I'm not mad about it, actually. Okay. In the first couple minutes of the film, Sigourney Weaver's character talks directly to you and the audience. Like, there, oh, wow. That is almost throughout the entire film. She is talking to you.
Fourth wall break?
Yes, all over the place. And it's wonderful. And, you know, she's talking about her life and what's happened in the past and where she is now and getting older and the fact that her family held an intervention because they think she's an alcoholic. And so this is actually a movie about an alcoholic and alcoholism set in like an old people romantic comedy and sort of like a second coming of age type film. And it is so good. Like, I thought I knew where the story was going to go, and you don't know where it's going to go. And Sigourney Weaver is just amazing in this film. She like lets go. She has fun. She is like ridiculous and funny and serious. And like, there are moments where you are laughing so hard with her, and there are moments where you are like in tears with her as a character. So I, even though it wasn't what I was expecting it to be, and I don't want to give away too much because
I haven't seen it.
It's really a great film and so well done. So even though it wasn't what I was expecting it to be, it just like caught me by surprise and was so good. So,
okay. It looks like, this is available to rent on all platforms. It is not currently streaming anywhere that I can see, but what's interesting is it's got two directors, man and woman, together. That's awesome. Yeah, I didn't. Beverly D'Angelo is in it. That's cool.
Yes. Yes.
All right. Yeah, that Clooney movie with Julia Roberts. It's I got to tell you, the person who plays their daughter was the main character from the movie Booksmart, which I've seen a bajillion times and I love. So the fact that she was getting married to a guy is really disappointing, because in my mind, she's like a queer forever, you know?
Yeah.
All right. So my last thing I want to talk about, I was going to talk about a movie, but I decided this is more important. And coming up are going to be me and Sam's Oscar predictions, by the way. So stay tuned for that. The book is called The Black Guy Dies First, and it is by Dr. Robin R. Means Coleman. And Dr. Coleman is someone whose work I've been familiar with for a few years, because she was a big inspiration for Ashley Blackwell's Graveyard Shift Sisters, which is, I don't think she does anymore because she's a teacher now, which is where she should be. But Graveyard Shift Sisters was about Black women in horror films specifically. It was the first place that I ever saw to take that seriously, like on an academic kind of a level. And so it just, you know how it is, you find things that make you think about film in a whole different way. And so Dr. Coleman's book, The Black Guy Dies First, is all about Black characters in horror movies specifically, and it's about the history of that. And so she starts at the very beginning of film, goes through on through that. Obviously, I kind of kicked in with the familiarity. When they began talking about the 70s, my favorite era of movies, and it's because that's where Blackula comes from, and that's where Pam Grier comes from, and all my favorite stuff. And so it was wonderful to hear about all the Black horror movies of the particularly 71 through 76 era, where we got all of that stuff and Dr. Black and Mr. Hyde movies. There's some on there that aren't great, but there's a lot that are amazing. And it was because some companies were seeing the potential of getting Black audiences into theaters. And so they're like, let's make a movie. And sometimes there are even Black directors. And the horror movies from that time are absolutely wonderful. Some were made in Georgia, House on Skull Mountain, she talks about. And so then she gets into the 80s. Do you know that out of 19 Black characters in 80s horror movies, 16 of them die? That's not a good, like, and they also, the 80s were the era of the blockbuster. Really kind of started at the end of the 70s with Jaws and Star Wars.
Right.
Made millions of dollars, and studio people go, why are we bothering with making these Black movies? Because Black people are coming to see the white movies. So we'll just keep making these big budget white movies. Forget about them. And you got the era of the token Black person. And you got the era of the Black person who's just kind of there to be killed or to save the white people, you know?
Yeah.
So that's what the 80s were. When she got to the 90s, she said there were more black films made by 1991 than there were in the entire 80s in terms of horror.
Mm.
So obviously the 80s weren't great, but it really kind of solidified why so many 80s movies I just either wasn't exposed to, or why I just can't like go crazy about. I didn't see Raiders of the Lost Ark till last summer. Goonies, I didn't even see until the summer before that. I'm 46 years old in this stuff. So it really kind of, I do not hold some kind of like, 80s obviously were a revolution in horror in terms of makeup effects. Yes, that was, you know, they started getting real money for the movies and started making them, you know, for, I guess, they became popular because of that. They're a bigger thing and taken more seriously and started to win awards and there's magazines and all this. But yeah, man, read The Black Guy Dies First. Because we're talking up until Nope. We're talking up until very recently. That's the where this covers. And it covers how voodoo's represented. It covers how like ghosts are represented. It covers how zombies, aliens, like everything. It goes through all of that. And so she really, like, Robin, she tells it like it is. And there were some of my favorite stuff that she really kind of, you know, grabbed by the collar and shook around. And I was like, oh, God, she's so right. And then other things that I had dismissed that I didn't even want to see. Let's put it this way. I had never seen a Purge movie, and Dr. Coleman sold me the entire Purge collection. I just bought it because of how she framed it. So anyway, Black Guy Dies First. I want everyone who calls themselves a horror movie fan to own this book. You will reference it time and time again. I want everyone who definitely who's a fan of black film to pick this up too, because as we know, we are progressing and progressing and seeing lots of changes, and things are just in a very revolutionary point still. Sam, you love Jordan Peele.
Yes.
I have a Jordan Peele Rules t-shirt that I bought at a convention. Nice. To counteract the one the kid wears in Monster Squad, Stephen King Rules. It's time for another one. And so, anyway, before we get to the Oscar picks.
Yeah.
You and I are both going to see Cocaine Bear tomorrow night.
I cannot wait. I cannot wait. I cannot wait. I almost sung. I cannot wait.
I cannot wait. I would sing too. I've got tickets to 10 o'clock. Me and Joy are going. She loves horror and loves going to see. Actually, she loves. We may see Creed 3 too.
That I'm going at 7:30 my time. So like you and I are going to be in the movie at the same time.
We're seeing a movie together ish.
Kind of. Yeah.
Okay. Hope the roads aren't too icy. You said they're going to melt.
Yeah.
But as far as the upcoming stuff for March or beyond, is there anything you are very excited about other than seeing your friend Timothée Chalamet as a Willy Wonka? I don't even know when that's coming out.
I really like him, but I don't know that I want to see another Willy Wonka. We'll see.
But this was just Wonka, so maybe he has no Willy.
So they took the Willy off. Okay, yeah, all right. That makes sense.
Yeah.
Let's see. What am I excited about that's coming up?
Well, I have next after month. Cocaine Bear. I also have tickets for Scream Part 6.
I think Jesus Revolution looks interesting.
You're gonna see a faith-based movie.
But is it?
Yeah, it is.
It's
Godsploitation. I mean, that's the new genre, though. I mean, I saw the trailer and it started to look good until they started doing it, got really Jesus-y, and I was like, this is one of those movies.
Oh, maybe I haven't seen the extended trailer then or something.
Well, no, you're by all means, that's what they want. They want to get this like the secular audience into these things, but mostly who they want to buy is church groups buying like a whole theater full, which they do. Put Jesus in the title, man. They're there. It's just like the old days when it was like the word chainsaw or bikini was in the title. Man, we're all there for chainsaw. I know I am.
Yeah.
But now this is the modern equivalent of that is these, you know, they put God in the title or Jesus in the title or whatever. Sometimes they get it real sneaky, and now they've got them where big name actors are in them too. It's just like the superhero movies. It's just the God side of it.
Well, it's not one that I'm probably going to see in a theater, and it's probably one I'm waiting. I'm just saying it's definitely one that I'm probably waiting to see at home. But okay. Creed 3 is a really good possibility.
God, it looks amazing.
I just have not seen the first two. So I got to catch up.
They're boxing movies. They get you, you know, and Ryan Coogler made them. I know you're a Black Panther fan.
I am. I don't like watching boxing, and I don't like MMA or fighting. Like, I don't like watching people.
I don't either. But boxing
hit each other for sport.
These movies are super emotional. They're extensions of the Rocky movies.
Yeah, I'm not the fan of the Rocky films. Anyway, I will probably see it.
You don't like Raging Bull either.
It's okay. It's 65. One of
the few, dude things that really gets me is boxing movie. I don't know what it is. I'm not a sports person, but the boxing movie is like so freaking emotional. Remember The Wrestler? Do you know, like, The Wrestler with Mickey Rourke?
It's okay. I just have a hard time watching that. It makes me not feel okay watching people just hit each other for sport. It doesn't, like, set well with me. I don't know. And I know it's even a film. It's not real. And I don't know.
What if it was a Jesus boxing movie? You want to go
that would be better. Okay. I could do it. I'm interested in 65 for sure. I really like Adam Driver. It looks so good.
I was like, what's the deal with this? And then dinosaurs. I'm like, oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm in for 65. What else is coming out? We got a new Shazam movie coming out. Did you like Shazam 1?
I haven't seen it yet.
But you know, it's about a kid who gets superpowers.
Yeah.
So that's cool. Becomes an actual, like, full-size superhero. It's like a little kid. Let's see. We got a Super Mario, which my kid, thanks to you and that Nintendo Switch, is a full-on Mario fan and is, like, all pumped about Mario.
That's good. I'm skipping that one, but I am interested in the new John Wick film. That series.
I had somebody mail me the John Wick 1 and 2 because they found I had never seen them. But I was like, you know what? I don't watch my Matrix movies anymore. I don't watch my John Woo movies anymore. I don't watch any Guy Ritchie. I'm just not a gun movie guy, you know? And so they're still sitting here. And I know there was a whole part 3. And there will be a day, like there are for The Purge, where I'll... But do they show his dog being killed? First movie? I know, like, it's about
show it story. No, but you know it's happening right off screen, so that's a tough one. But there's nice doggies in the other two.
Do they live?
they do, and they kick some butt with Halle Berry.
I know Halle Berry. Okay, maybe I'll just start with John Wick 2, or maybe skip over the dog thing.
Yeah,
there's an app I use called Does the Dog Die?
Yes. And
actually, some of the users tell you skip from this minute to this minute, point. And you're fine. So that
may
be you. I've already
Ooh, Dungeons and Dragons.
Yes, right?
That looks It looks so good. So good. And so I don't even play that game, and it looks great.
No, but you remember the old, did you see the one with Jeremy Irons, the first Dungeons and Dragons movie they made?
I probably did, but I don't remember it.
It was too serious. Like, it was corny because it was how serious. But this looks like they're making it fun, like Army of Darkness, kind of.
Yeah. Yes. So those are my ones for March.
Speaking of, I know it's April, but Evil Dead Rise. Have you seen the trailer for Evil Dead Rise?
Yes.
It is kind of like with Scream. They're taking it out of its usual element. And this is going to be the first Evil Dead movie that's like not a cabin in the woods, but it's in New York. So we got two of our horror franchises going to the big city, just like Jason did to Manhattan. Although that was kind of BS. The most of Jason Takes Manhattan, he was on a boat. It was not like what the poster said. I'm looking forward to, you know, this is going to... Have you seen a trailer for one called Champions? It is by one part of the Farrelly brothers. I believe it's Bobby.
Mm.
But it is about Woody Harrelson coaches, I guess we call it a special needs basketball league something like that, or basketball team. And you know how the Farrelly brothers have always cast people of different abilities with in roles in their films? Like, they've historically always done that.
Yeah.
And so this is like their first like time that really, I believe, the whole plot and most major supporting characters are played by them. I can't wait for that. That it looked, watch the trailer for Champions. You're gonna want to see it. I guess, when is Disney Haunted Mansion coming out? There's a whole new one. Like, I love the Eddie Murphy one, but there's a whole new one coming out.
I don't think it's coming out for a while still.
I also saw they made a movie about how Tetris happened.
Oh, yes. That trailer looks
Apple
great.
Apple TV, Apple original.
As well as the, like, Air Jordan movie that the trailer just dropped recently. That actually.
The Little Mermaid. Mm-hmm. They just did the teaser for Little Mermaid. I think that's coming out, like, kind of ish soon, maybe. I don't know. Anyway, you looking forward to the Oscars? The Oscars, I think, are on the 12th or something, whatever date.
They do happen to be on my birthday this year.
Okay. So Sam will be celebrating her birthday with an Oscar party?
Oh, probably not. I don't know.
You used to do Oscar party.
Oh, I did. And I still kind of do Josie and the Pussycats for my birthday. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. We'll see.
All right. Well, here's my thing with the Oscars. First of all, people say, why do you care? They don't mean anything. They're not important. I'm sorry. But for movie fans, it's just interesting. You can't not care. Even the people that say they don't care are the ones that are like posting a lot. I have people that I have muted on social media on Oscar time because they post a lot about how they don't care. And then they post their reaction to every single award.
I think I know some of these people too.
So I'm interested, and I have to do picks and predictions for my job. And so,
here we go.
We're going to do just our favorites for, and I have not thought about this yet. And I may change my mind by the time I write the article, but we're going to do the actor, the supporting, and then we'll do the best everything or whatever. How about that? These are the categories that I pick for work. So for an actor in a leading role, the nominees are Austin Butler for Elvis, Colin Farrell for The Banshees of Inisherin, Brendan Fraser for The Whale, Paul Mescal for After Sun, and Bill Nye for Living. For this, I think Austin Butler for Elvis. Elvis is an incredible film, and what he did there, I think, blasts. I have not seen After Sun or Living, so I'm just going to go by. I've loved all three of these movies, The Whale and Banshees of Inisherin. Banshees of Inisherin is kind of a horror movie, actually. A lot of severed body parts in it, if you haven't seen it. But Elvis was an incredible experience. I mean, he plays Elvis throughout his entire life, not just Elvis in, you know, like most biopics will choose
an era,
a pivotal time or whatever. And people have won Oscars for that or been nominated for that. But he plays Elvis in every part of his life and did all the singing. It's Baz Luhrmann. The movie is just, my only problem is that I didn't care for Tom Hanks. he narrates the movie as Colonel Tom Parker, as if Colonel Tom Parker was Elmer Fudd. It's his weird voice that he does. This here story is about Elvis Presley. So other than that, it's great.
Like to see Brendan Fraser win.
Yeah.
I haven't seen any of them yet.
Fraser's just a sentimental, or not a sentimental, kind of emotional favorite because of how his career has kind of come back as a result of The Whale. He didn't stop acting. He was just always part of an ensemble or something like that. You know, he's done television. He's been in the DC stuff, or no, was it Doom Patrol? But The Whale, he's great. His co-stars are great. And it's not about what I thought it was going to be about. You know, there's the whole discussion over not just having somebody who's of that body size play it. but his character didn't start out that size. He kind of progressed into that size. So it's a story about that too. I don't know. But anyway, so you say Fraser, I say Butler. Now we will go to actor in a supporting role. This is the order they're on the Oscar website. So whatever. Okay. Actor in a supporting role nominees, Brendan Gleeson for The Banshees of Inisherin, Brian Tyree Henry for Causeway, Judd Hirsch for The Fablemans, Barry Keoghan for Banshees of Inisherin, and Kehoe Kwan for Everything Everywhere All at Once. Do you clearly, it looks like you have a favorite for this. Do you want to just go for it?
Kehoe Kwan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this thing's going to, you know, it was my favorite movie of the year.
Mm-hmm.
So I want it to take every award.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see that happen. But I will say, Brian Tyree Henry and Causeway. Causeway is, it's a serious movie, but it does have humor, obviously. Jennifer Lawrence plays someone who's got a brain injury while serving in, I believe, Afghanistan or Iraq or something like that. And so it's about her recovery coming home from the brain injury and dealing with coming back home. And, things get revealed that there was more trauma that she experienced before ever becoming a soldier. Brian Tyree Henry is a person who becomes her friend, and he's also damaged in his own way, as we find out. And so it's just kind of about the two of them. I was worried that it was going to be the magical Negro kind of a movie, but it's not. It's just as much about him as it is about her. And I love Brian Tyree Henry. I always have. You remember him in The Eternals, right? I mean, that was a great, great part. But this, if Everything Everywhere, of course, I want to see it get the award. I want him to get the award specifically. And of course, Michelle Yeoh will come to that. That's not going to surprise anyone. All right. So we're going Kehoe Kwan for best supporting. Best actress in a leading role. The nominees are Kate Blanchett for Tar. Ana de Armas for Blonde. Andrea Riseborough for To Leslie. Michelle Williams for The Fablemans, and Michelle Yeoh, Everything Everywhere All at Once. Do we even need to say?
No.
Yeah.
It's totally Yeoh.
The thing about Tar, all I remember is Kate Blanchett was great. I don't even now remember what the movie is even about. you know what I mean? But I love that they put Ana de Armas here for Blonde. Everyone hated that movie before they even saw it, just like The Whale.
Yeah.
And what she did in that movie, I always thought she was good. I know she was in the movie Knock Knock, the Eli Roth movie. She's just been around. I think she was a small role Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. Maybe. I don't even know. This is the first time I really took notice. And that was not an easy role to do. And she just nailed it. I thought it was gutsy to nominate her, but she totally deserves it. But obviously, Michelle Yeoh, I've been a fan since the early 90s. I watch movies kind of like we talked about J-Lo earlier. I'll watch Michelle Yeoh in anything. So we're both going for her. Actress in a supporting role. The nominees are Angela Bassett for Black Panther. Hong Chau for The Whale. She was the one I was talking about that plays like his caregiver friend. God, she was amazing. Carrie Condon for Banshees of Inisherin, Jamie Lee Curtis, Everything Everywhere All at Once, and Stephanie Hsu for Everything Everywhere All at Once. So we have an impasse here.
Yeah, I'm so split between two of them.
Okay, this is why I want Stephanie Hsu to win. She was not nominated for the Golden Globe, and I was mad about that. Because she is incredible. Because while this... Everything Everywhere is not a showcase for Michelle Yeoh, although she is the main character.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone shines.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think I'd ever seen Stephanie Hsu in anything. And she is heavy as crap in that movie, isn't she?
Yeah.
I mean, everyone's great. So you...
No, I'm really stuck between Angela Bassett and Jamie Lee Curtis.
Okay. Angela Bassett, I mean, I can tell you the moment from Wakanda Forever that they will probably play. And it's the one where, I think it's the one where it's not the one where Okoye comes back and gets stripped of her rank. I think it's the one where Nakia comes back. No, it's the one where Nakia brings Shuri back the first time. And she's talking about how she, you know, I lost my son. And you had me afraid that I was going to lose my daughter. I think it's that whole speech. I've seen it a few times. But so that's still play. But I know what you mean. I mean, everyone in Black Panther had a hard thing to do.
Yeah.
From the directing and writing on down through the cast and everything, because of the weight and the shadow of Chadwick Boseman over that film. So I hear you. Absolutely. Did you see any of the animated feature film? Did you see Turning Red or Marcel the Shell?
No.
Okay, we won't talk about that then.
Okay.
I have to say Marcel the Shell with shoes on is brilliant. But I think Pinocchio is going to win it. I know that's who my kid wants to win. She's a Pinocchio stan. Okay. So we're going to do director and best picture, and that's it.
All right.
Okay. So for director, we have Martin McDonagh for The Banshees of Inisherin. We have the Daniels for Everything Everywhere All at Once. We got Spielberg for The Fablemans, Todd Field for Tar, and Ruben Östlund for Triangle of Sadness. So you haven't seen Banshees of Inisherin or Tar, right?
Correct.
But did you see Triangle of Sadness?
No.
Yeah, it's hilarious. There's like so much vomit in it. Like you'll love it. I was laughing like crazy during that. You going with Everything Everywhere, the Daniel?
Yes.
Me too.
Yes.
Me too, obviously. I'm a fan of I like Todd Field because he hardly ever makes a movie, but every time he does, it's excellent. Like he'll wait like 7 to 10 years between movies. It's excellent. I always remember him, though, as the drug addicted guy from the movie Gross Anatomy.
Yes.
He was the one guy that just had the drug problem. But Triangle of Sadness, guy, what a classic that was. All right. We'll go to Best Picture. The category. Notice no women were nominated for Best Director. Interesting.
Is that because James Cameron's in this list now and he doesn't want to be beat out by his ex-wife?
That was great. That's one of the best Oscar moments, you know.
I know, right?
Screwing over Barry Jenkins for Moonlight. That was one of the worst. I'll say this now, because I didn't say it before. I haven't watched the Oscars since like 06.
I still watch them every year. But I watch them like so that I can skip through parts. So I watch it like on a delay.
No, I don't have cable. So what I do is I just watch the social media ticker. You know, yeah. Oscars.com has a Twitter. And so, you know, they're good about showing that, and then they'll put clips on. So I can watch. Usually Oscar night is reserved for the trashiest movies that I have. I'm done watching important movies. And a lot of these I wouldn't have watched except for I knew they were nominated for an Oscar. Ooh, we'll talk about that in a second. Okay. The nominees for Best Picture are, I think the category is 9 or 10. This year we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. We do all 10? Yeah, they took all 10. Some years it's 8, some years it's 9. This year it was 10. The nominees are All Quiet on the Western Front, Avatar The Way of Water, Banshees of Inisherin, Elvis, Everything Everywhere All at Once, The Fablemans, Tar, Top Gun Maverick, Triangle of Sadness, and Women Talking. Now, we know that they opened this category up to more nominees than the traditional 5 a few years ago because they wanted more people watching the Oscars. People got tired of being like, I don't want to watch the Oscars. It's a bunch of movies that didn't play in my town or that I didn't see, you know? And so they open it up to your Avatar and your Top Gun.
Right. I just want to go on the record and say this. If anybody has listened to our podcasts for any, like way back in the day, I made the comment when the first Avatar movie came out on one of our podcasts that I was pretty frustrated that a movie that is like mostly CG is under the best picture as opposed to best animated film. Because I
don't mind if it's nominated in both, because sometimes they are.
But why is it not in animated also?
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. I have not seen Avatar, but Dee and I are going to go Friday morning and see it in 3D together, like the good Americans we are. That and All Quiet on the Western Front are the only ones in this list that I haven't seen. I saw Top Gun when my car repair was going to take longer than I thought. And so I was right near a movie theater, so I popped in for Top Gun. I didn't see the ending. I eventually later did on streaming. But, I've seen all these other ones. And like I said, Elvis, just real. I don't know how it plays on TV, but in the theater, you felt like you're right there at those classic concerts that looked like them. What an experience that was. And then, so the only one I haven't seen is All Quiet on the Western Front, but that's typical in an Oscar year. Usually don't see the war movie. I just don't like war movies. I'm like maybe with boxing movies with you, except for knowing it really happened and seeing those people get blown up. They're always so gory now. Ever since Private Ryan, they're always so gory. I got nothing. I don't want to see it. And so obviously my pick is Everything Everywhere All at Once. Sam?
As is mine, yes.
Okay.
Although a part of me also wants Top Gun Maverick to win. It was not even in my top five favorite films last year, if you listen to that podcast. Just because I think it would be interesting if something that is such a commercial success and like the people's choice and popular vote to win an Academy Award, as opposed to more of the critics' choice to win an Academy Award, would be an interesting turn. So if Top Gun Maverick won, I wouldn't be mad.
Yeah.
That's just me. I still want Everywhere All at Once to win, but I wouldn't be mad if it was Top Gun.
Yeah, I feel like they throw stuff like Avatar and Top Gun in there basically just to get to not seem snobby.
Yeah.
I don't think they have a chance. They could do something like give it to Tar. Or they could go all in for all Quiet on the Western Front, but you know, it's not an American movie, it's German. That would be wild.
Mm-hmm.
But no, I wouldn't be mad if Top Gun and Avatar won. I would eventually be able to laugh about it.
Yeah.
But my take is it would be super, super sad because I know why they're doing it. They're desperate. Mm-hmm. Oscars have always been snotty. They've always been elitist. You can't change 100 years of snotty elitist. You know what I'm saying? You know, you're the Oscars. Sorry, you made a golden statue. It's not a popcorn MTV bucket. It's not the slime awards at Nickelodeon. So
maybe it's the beginning of Idiocracy coming to fruition. I don't know.
We were way past that.
It's phase two. Idiocracy went
from disturbing to like plausible to like, oh God, I wish it were Idiocracy.
Yes.
In Idiocracy, no one was murdering people. So, and who wouldn't rather have Terry Crews as the president?
Right? And feed your plants with Gatorade. It's what our plants crave, you know?
Yeah. I mean, instead of inciting, you know, all the crazy racist gun-toting whatever. That's a whole other podcast for a whole other time. Sam? As always, it is a pleasure to do this.
Yes. Sorry for like almost dying in the middle of talking about bones and all.
That's fine. I don't think I'm going to remember to edit around that. So
that's okay. It's okay. Choking in the middle of a cannibal review is like just kind of funny.
Yeah. And I don't think I got a chance to talk maybe about bones and all because it wasn't we did the Friday Five about our top movies of the year. We just did our top five that we elaborated on. So I only mentioned bones and all in passing. So that was cool. Downside is people had to hear me talk more. Oh my God, a middle-aged white man with a podcast. And he's talking about movies, you say. Why would we give him an honorary Oscar for being so original? That's what this is, Sam. You make this show something I want to hear.
Yeah.
Yeah.